Okay, this is actually the continuation of a longer shir. It's a really beautiful piece we're going to discuss right now. Is we're going to talk about the idea of needing to be valued. We're continuing the discussion of page 213. Well, 213 technically, yeah. The importance of needing to be valued. So Rav Hoffman says that people are born helpless, right? We know that
this week's parsha, by the way.
That's right. People are born helpless. We don't have any kochos of ourselves. We need to be fed. We need to be clothed. We need to be bathed. We need to be, you know, carried and taken care of in every single thing we do. We're obviously different than animals. Everyone's seen like a video of like a baby giraffe, like an elephant that's walking around like 5 minutes later. And they're fine. They go about what they need to do. And we, without a doubt, always need to be sustained. From the moment we're born, we need to be sustained. We need to be helped. And therefore, we are talui, that's the lashon he uses. We are dependent on other people all the time. And that becomes part of our personality, that we're always totally independent on those around us. And this needing to be dependent causes us to grow up to believe that we're telling other people and we look to other people to be valued, we look to other people for appreciation, we look to other people for a chevra, always needing others around us to make us feel safe. And he says that bedidus, to be alone, is a person feels helpless because we need others. When a person is alone, when a person does not have any friends, when a person is in quarantine, whatever you want to call it, what is the feeling? The feeling is that we're helpless. Because as human beings, we need other people. And therefore, when I'm alone, I feel helpless because my support system is no longer there. And therefore, we see with a baby, and even with a child, the example is, and we've discussed this before, you know, you can have a little child who's 3 years old playing in the other room, can play straight for 20 minutes. Doesn't bother anyone, playing with Legos, playing with a ball. And then all of a sudden, they pop up, and they walk to the other room. Why? Because it's quiet. And they want to know that, you know, mommy or daddy are there. They don't even need you to talk with them. They don't even want to play with you. They just want to know that you're there because we don't want to feel alone. We are totally on other people. And to have that sense of trust, that sense of bitachon, that we are being taken care of. Children crying for no reason is one of those things. Sometimes a kid will just like burst into tears. Why? Because he wants to know that somebody's there. Somebody's taking care of him. And he's going to be able to be reliant on another person. So what this tells us, he says, is that the mitzias of man is how this is how we're created. We are created that we need other people, and we cannot really avoid it. And there is this fear. There is this constant fear of no one being concerned for us. Who will care about me? Do people value me? Do people care what I do? You know, this is obviously a big thing in marriages as well, right? You want to feel respected by your spouse. You want your spouse to feel that you are someone who matters, who provides, who, you know, is an integral part of the family. You don't want to feel that you're, you know, useless and, you know, just a third wheel. You want to feel that you're valued and that people are concerned for you. He says that, we've discussed this before as well, Chazal say this, Rashi says this, the Jewish people said to Moshe, "Hayesh Hashem bir kirbenu." Is Hashem amongst us? And Rashi says that Bnei Israel kept on pushing Hashem because they wanted to know that Hashem was there. They wanted to feel that Hashem was concerned for them, cared for them, and that's why he says Bnei Israel caused so many issues in the Midbar because they always wanted to say, "Is Daddy there? Is Daddy going to take care of us no matter what we do?" And therefore, he goes on to explain that a child should feel loved without conditions. A child needs to know in all different situations that he's going to be loved no matter what. If a child ever feels that the reason mommy and daddy like me, they are kind to me, they smile, is because I got good grades, because I cleaned up the dishes, because I, you know, whatever it is, then that's not good. They should never feel that the love is conditioned. They want to know that you're going to be there all the time, no matter what. And he says, Shekol Adam Rotz Elios Ahov Me'urach B'li Shum Tnai. Every human being wants to feel loved and valued unconditionally. If we know it for ourselves, so certainly we should obviously transfer that to our children. Our children also want the same thing that we want as well in order to feel loved and happy and taken care of. And if we have this, it opens up a sense of value inside of children. People will feel that they are loved and they are taken care of and they'll be in a good place or able to provide this for our kids. And then he says the following point. He says that dependence causes a person to need more kavod. He says a person who is dependent on others causes them to feel that they need more kavod from other people. A person who is independent, an independent child, will need less kavod from people. Again, the dependent child will grow up to need more kavod from other people, but the independent child will grow up to feel that they do not need kavod from other people. Then he asks a very important question. He says, we often think that kavod and gaiva are part of the same thing, right? The guy needs so much kavod, he's such a bal gaiva, right? This will describe someone like this. Obviously not after Parshas Tezriya Mitzorah and speaking Lashon Hara, but someone may perhaps describe someone as needing a lot of kavod, and they're always a kavod fresser, and they always have such gaiva. So he says, kavod and gaiva are not the two things. It's the same thing. They're actually opposites. Why? Listen to what he says. He says, kavod means that I need value from the outside. I need someone else, something else, to mechabed me for who I am and what I do. He says, gaiva is the other extreme. Gaiva is where I avoid any dependence, and I'm totally into myself. I don't need other people. I am so amazing. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you say about me. I'm so independent on the other extreme that I don't care about what people think at all. Kavod and gaiva, the search for kavod and the search for gaiva, are two extremes in the wrong direction. We want to be somewhere in the middle of that, of those feelings. We want to not be totally independent that I don't care about other people at all, but I don't want to be totally dependent that I need everybody, you know, to make me feel like I'm the center of the universe.
One doesn't
feed off the other. Is that what he says?
I've met Rabbanim fit both categories.
not
one person that fits, but I'm saying there are Rabbanim that said they feel they're awesome and they're
correct.
Whatever it is, and there's ones that they need everyone to
correct 100%.
That they need to cut everyone, like if you do anything, whatever it is, I get turned off
here
by, like, I run far away from them.
Okay,
can I get again,
the
difference between kavod and gaiva?
Kavod is a person. Yeah,
my daughter.
Kavod is the person needs total value from the outside. I need people to be mechabed me. I need someone to say something nice about me, to value everything I'm doing.
A common example that I think is, like, I'm not coming to your wedding unless you give me, like, the number one thing. Even if he's not your Rosh Hashanah, like, the ones that, like, I get very turned off by that one. Like, it should be the person deciding whatever it is. Like,
correct.
You know, maybe he has a rub that he has a thing, but you're still connected. Don't show up if you're not connected. Why do you have to say, for my cover, like, some will say, I know they'll say because it's covered at time. Like, I still never like that.
No one who's going to say
but
it's not covered.
Say, I'm not coming to your thing unless you give me the Masadi reading the whatever.
Correct.
Like, for what?
Well, that's the
cover. After
this
shout
out,
that's covered. That's covered. That's not
covered.
That there's such a person.
Gaiva is the other extreme. Gaiva is where a person says, I don't need you. I don't care what you have to say. I'm right all the time. They're too independent.
Isn't that gaiva, though?
What?
That's gaiva.
To say that I'm right all the time.
That's gaiva. That's not kavod.
No, but... Okay, sorry. I'm saying, the person who says, give me a lot of kavod.
Yeah.
He thinks he's worthy of that kavod.
They're coming from two separate places. The person who needs kavod is because he needs other people. I need other people to value him. It's an insecurity in his in who he is. I need other people to. I can't. We'll use the example of the wedding. I can't go to the wedding unless I feel that I'm being valued. If I just go, I'm just a regular attendee. Then, like, I feel like it's not nobody values me. I can't go out. It's not worth. It's not worth me. Gaiva says, it doesn't matter. You're wrong for not honoring me. Meaning you made a mistake. You're wrong. I'm a big tzaddik. I'm a very chashuv person. You're wrong. But the feelings of kavod and the feelings of gaiva come from two different places, as Ravaldo.
We'll expect it. We'll expect and be angry at the end. Why wouldn't you give me that thing? The other one says, before they even show up, by the way, I'm only showing up if you do this. The other...
For most,
when you stand up for Rav, whatever it is, you can say you're also standing up for Kavanah Torah.
Of course you are.
But there's...
Okay, so then he goes. So then he goes, says the opposite. He says kavod and gaiva are different. He explains that ha'osa kol ha'chaim hishtadlios gluyos v'smuyos shiricha oso. Kavod is a person spends his whole life looking for outward signs of respect. He says gaiva is lahefech. People don't appreciate who I am. So he says, they'll say, who are you to show me value? This like I don't need your cards, I don't need your applause, I don't need your yashikayas. I'm much better than that. You are beneath me. The person who's guy will say everything else is beneath me because I'm the center of everything. So what does this tell us? He says, with these two natures of kavod and gaiva, a person is born to lucy. They're dependent on other people. And this is always the tension. The tension between gaiva and kavod is the tension between wanting and not wanting others to care about you. I want others to care about me a little bit, but not too much. And this is this balance that we're trying also to raise with our children. We're trying to inculcate in them to have a sense of value, but not to be totally dependent on other people. So he's going to develop this in the next piece over here.
It's like I heard in a show where someone said someone was speaking somewhere at some dinner, someone together, and she said, "Just don't mention my name. Don't mention my name. It's fine."
Yeah.
And then he didn't mention name. They're like, "Why didn't you mention my name?"
So there's a good tension there. So then let's apply this now to children. He says, "Begil shana v'chetzi." He says, "You should know, at the age of 1.5 years, is the age where the child begins to learn independence and not to depend on others." That's a key age, 1.5, where a child begins to balance that. I'll explain why in a moment. He says, you know, all animals within, you know, a few days of being born, they already know how to be masada themselves, how to take care of themselves, things like that. And we know that a baby, its whole life, needs the mother, food, and if without food, you know, a baby wouldn't be able to live, wouldn't be able to take care of itself. The baby is born with this tuluyos, being dependent on the mother totally. So he says something interesting. He says, mankind, on one hand, is the pinnacle of creation, right? We are also the most dependent on others. It's funny, human beings, right? We are the pinnacle and the leaders of the world. We run the world, we take care of the world. We are the most powerful beings on this earth. We are also the most pathetic things in the world. We are totally dependent on anything else. If something goes wrong in our system for a moment, we entirely shut down. We're very weak. So
well,
is this
saying like the person that loves you the most gives the most agnus nefesh?
Yeah. Okay.
That expresses.
So there you go. So yeah. What is it with human beings? He says what? So he brings a beautiful pshat in a pasuk in Tehillim from Chaskel San. The pasuk this in Tehillim Kuf Lamed Aleph. The pasuk says, "Kegamul alai imo, kegamul alai nafshi." So he says as follows. What does that mean? That Hashem is gomel, just like my mother is gomel on me, so too you are gomel on my nefesh. That dependence on mothers, says Reb Chaskel Sarna, forces us to recognize the dependence on the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He says we are born dependent because it forces us to know what it means to need something else, a higher power. Human beings are born needing their mommy so much because now we know what it needs, now we know what it means to need something else in order to be succeed. And Hashem created humans this way to teach us how to foster bitachon. Such a beautiful insight from Chaskel Sarna. We are different than animals. Animals don't need that. Hashem's not interested whether animals believe him or not. They don't, they're fine. But we are here in this world to be Megala Kvod Shemayim. And therefore Hashem brings us into the world to learn how to be dependent on something, i.e. our parents. So we grow up, we have a concept of what it means to be totally dependent and reliant on a higher power.
I hope you appreciate that.
Okay, so that's something else. Yeah. But that's the lesson. That's the lesson of, right, of what it means to have a parent. I think a beautiful insight from Rav Chaskel Sarna. And he says over time, Rav Chaskel Sarna was the Rosh Yeshiva in Hebron, which was a place that Shlomo Hoffman spent a lot of time. So he says, La'at la'at ha'adam ma'avir es hatlios bi'imo l'mala. Slowly but surely over time, a person needs to transfer that dependence from our parents to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and to a higher power. Then he says the following point. He says that we start to move away from our parents over time, and that's a good thing, right? Any healthy parent-child relationship is that you want your child to become independent. You don't want your child, you know, when they're 30 years old, still calling to figure out, you know, how do you boil a pot of water to make noodles. So hopefully the child learns how to become dependent and to be good on their own. So he says, let's give an example. He says the mother feeds the child with a spoon, right? and at a certainly annoying age, like at like 9 months or 10 months, your child starts grabbing the spoon, right? So what does the mother do? No, you're not going to. You're going to make a mess. There's going to be peas and carrots everywhere. I'm going to have to clean it up after you. It's going to be crazy. I don't have time for this. I have other kids to take care of. I'm not. You're not feeding yourself with a spoon. This is going to be a chorban right here at the kitchen table. You're not going to have a spoon. So Hoffman says he thinks that's a mistake. It's a mistake because when the mother tells the child at a year, year and a half, you can't feed yourself. So then, when the mother's telling the child, you need to be dependent on me. You're not fostering kosher independence. You're not fostering a sense that the child can feel that they're doing things on their own and they're learning how to grow up and how to be mature. So what's the answer?
We have to stick the peas in front of them.
No,
for 9 months?
He says you need to have a balance.
They have the spoon there.
You need to have a balance of which foods to do it. You need to learn. There's a time where the mother teaches the child to do it, but maybe there's also a time where you give the child a way to do it on themselves. Maybe peas and carrots. You know, there's a way to do it to get the child. They can foster independence. I'm telling you, even for my own kids, there's nothing better when they're able to figure out how to pick up a Cheerio with their two fat fingers, right, and they can feed themselves. It's a totally different world, and you don't have to sit there for 9 hours feeding them and get it.
The high chairs are cool.
What?
The high chairs, you just throw them there.
Sure, exactly. So, but he said, I'm very against the idea that no, you can't do it. I have to do it because I'm concerned it's going to be a mess on the floor. I'm concerned it's going to be. You have to, part of with little children is teaching them to be independent and do things on their own in a safe way. He says the following point. He says independence is going to come whether or not you like it. Your child is going to push for independence whether or not you expect it or whether or not you're looking forward to it. Better, he said, to support healthy growth and independence than to fight it. Do it in a way that's going to be kosher for everybody. Instead of saying, no, you can't do this. You can't do this on your own. I have to be there with you. I have to be all these signs and holding them the whole back so
does
they
that
can't
mean
grow.
I have to teach my 8-year-old, 7-year-old to throw that across the street?
At a certain point.
I want to wait till 10. But
what?
He's begging to cross at 6 or his friends are doing it at 7.
No, okay. You're not saying like until you're 20. I don't think that's like, you know, I don't think,
right.
I'm not going to give a magic number, but I don't think that's crazy. But yeah, at the right age to do it. But I think sometimes we have, you know, the kids can't go anywhere by themselves. You have to call me. You know, this is a point of discussion. I have students who will go to, there are many parents who have trackers on their kids' phones. Little trackers on the phones. And I had students who go to Eretz Yisrael, and their parents want to keep the trackers on their phones in Eretz Yisrael. I think it's time you're letting your kid go into a foreign country. You know, they're under somebody else's care. It's time to take the tracker off the phone. Like, you know, at a certain point, where is that line? It's somewhere. But it can't be never. There has to be a point where the child says to the parents of the child, good, I'm a big boy, I'm a big girl, I don't need a tracker on my phone, I'm 19 years old in Israel. Like, you know, you have to trust me a little bit here. There's a certain point where it comes. So to say, crossing the street, 7, 8, 9, 10, okay, the parents and the child will come to that decision. But what it can't be is never.
Never.
It's not going to happen. No, and there's no discussion about it, and there's nothing to talk about. There has to be an open discussion about when that time is going to be. Better to foster it in a healthy and a good and a positive way, because they're going to go for independence no matter what you like. And they're going to find a way that it's going to be unhealthy if it's not done in a healthy way. So they asked him, Rav Stein asked him, why this age? Why is 1.5 this age, you know, where independence starts to be fostered? So he says that, you know, he says all the experiences that a child undergoes from the time he's born until about 3 or 4, they are the most important experiences in his life. That's what he says. 3 to 4 is a major, major time where the experiences they undergo will be with them for the rest of their life. And he says when they're at that time and they're soft and they're moving around, you're able to mold them. All these things are key. And therefore, he feels that 1.5 is one of in that sweet spot of where independence can be fostered in a healthy way. And therefore, he's soaking up more, he's like a sponge, and there's independence being taught. And this is a great time to do it in a positive, healthy, happy way. Okay, the last section in the Shirim, he now talks about the need of chevra versus being valued. Okay? I do like my kids' friends. I don't like my kids' friends. You know, how do we balance this? So he says many, many times people have trouble balancing the need for being valued and chevra. And he says the need for being valued as a human being is not the same thing as needing friends. And let's not confuse the two, right? I need to be valued is not the same thing as that I need friends. So he explains as follows. He says the need for a chevra, for friendship, is a natural need that all humans need to at some point to have a kesher with other people. Value is that people are machshav me and they hold me on a pedestal. They hold me to be something important. But you can have, and he's going to explain in a moment, you can have a masmid in yeshiva who's the top guy in the yeshiva and he's valued. But does he have any friends? No. He's in the base medrash all day. Has no friends, doesn't socialize with anybody, but they value him. Chaim is a gevaldig masmid. He's held on a pedestal. But no chevra, because he has no time for anybody else. Right? He said, the chevraman, on the other hand, you have a person who's a chevraman, who gets along with everyone, and he's liked, but he's not valued. Why? Because he's never in the base medrash. He walks in at 10 o'clock and he leaves for like a smoke break at, you know, 11 o'clock. And like, you know, he's very friendly. Everybody likes him, but he's not valued. That's right. So the two things are not the same. He says that when he tells a story, he always has a good story. He tells a story. He says that when he was in Hebron, there was a bachur who was the biggest masmid. Okay. And he said, I never spoke with him because the guy was learning all day long. The Rosh Yeshivas were machshir him a lot. Really, mamash, the best bachur in the yeshiva. And one day, he came into my room and he started crying. He had a whole issue with his girl he wanted to be engaged to, and his parents weren't supportive, and there was money issues, and it fell apart, and he was very upset. And Shlomo Hoffman, as we know, at a young age, was somebody that people like to confide in, like to open to. So in the midst of that conversation, he tells him, Shlomo, I'm always jealous of you. So he said, you're jealous of me? He says, you're the biggest master in the yeshiva. Why are you jealous of me? So he tells him, you can learn and you can speak with people. You're normal. You have a balance. You're a good learner and you also know how to get along with people. I'm so jealous of that. And he said, not once was I ever jealous of this guy. Did I ever think he was jealous of me? But here you see that there was a very chashuv tzorich of a chevra. He needed it. And the guy said, I was only learning because I wanted the kavod and I wanted whatever. And, you know, I needed that chevra. So we see from here the chashivas of, you know, talking things out and speaking with someone. And he goes on he says, chaval shelo hayo lo keshim Rav Isaac Rav Chaskel. He says, chaval, this guy, you know, he was sitting in the basement all day. He never spoke to anybody. He never opened up. He just had in the Gemara the whole day and never opened up his personality. He never spoke about his conditions, never spoke about what was going on in his heart. And he never developed after that. He never really developed because he was looking for that haracha, that value, but not looking for a kesher with other people. And it was a very big problem for this young man.
That's what caused the issue in the
Shidduchim. No, no, no. That was just in the course of the discussion about Shidduchim, this came out that he was just kind of unloading on Shlomo Hoffman. That was the whole thing. So what does this tell us? He says, the extremes of Chevra and Haracha. Right? Someone could be extremely with friends, but then be a shmat that nobody values him, or extremely looking for value, but then have no friends and have nobody to connect to. And he says that friendship that makes you feel not good because you don't feel valued. There's a type of chevra where, oh, we're friends, but I feel like I'm always the butt of the joke. I feel like I have an opinion, nobody pays attention to it. So what did I gain there? I am too much obsessed with the friends, and I have no value. Nobody cares about who I am, and everybody thinks I'm nothing, and I'm nothing important. And he says the issue is when a person doesn't know he is valued, so he wastes time. He says this is also a problem. A person doesn't know that people value him, and he wastes his time. People don't realize that he's chashuv. So he spends all day, you know, on his phone. He spends all day, you know, doing silly things and watching sports and never seeing that, hey, you're people, you have so much more to offer. and he's just being a chevra man all the time, and he doesn't realize that, you know, people would pay attention to him if he had much more to offer. Yeah.
So far, we've just said Bali was learning Torah.
Anything, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's just learning. Yeah, anything. A person values you for your chesed. A person values for your
chesed.
Correct, 100%. But we have to. You can't go to the extreme where you're only with chevra just to forget people to like you, and then you never develop anything about yourself. So he says this need.
It's the same conversation.
Yeah, it all extends to the same dependence and independence. All extends to the same point exactly. So then he just he concludes this section over here, and he makes a few points. He says that there are people who are born naturally that they like chevra, and they always need to be meuravim with the chevra, mixing with people. What?
Extroverts,
exactly. And there are people who don't really need this at all. And I think there's a whole book that was written recently about the few years ago about the power of introverts. That there's a special introverts have what people often on introverts like, oh, like, you know, they're never going to get out, they're never going to do anything. But there's this very special place introverts can play. So he says that many times these kochos of a person can be opened up by their surroundings, especially by parents. Let's say he has a child who hears from his mother, you know, stop wasting your time talking with everybody and just, you know, go and learn. So what is that? How does that affect the child? Without saying anything, you're telling him that he doesn't need a chevra, he doesn't need to be friendly with other people. And the ikar thing is just to learn and not to be with other people. But many times, the parents can open up in the child the need of good friends, even if maybe in his nature, he's not a person who looked for friends. And when a child is born, and we tell him, oh, he's very cute and he's very sweet, and look at his eyes, and the whole time, we're showing him value, right? Kamayim panim lepanim, right? We're showing him that people get hanaf from the child, people are enjoying the child, and he begins to do things because other people want to laugh at him, right? The kid does cute things, the kid does funny things, because he wants people to laugh and to look at him. And then what happens? So he says, with little children, we have big children as well, right? Why do you go buy a nice new, why did you get a nice new tie? Because you want people to notice it, or because you like having a nice tie? Meaning, we have, you know, little children want attention from adults, and big children also want attention from adults. Why are you doing that thing? Did you get that unnamed, very expensive electric car? You know, because you value the environment, or you feel that this car is going to be good for you, or because you want people to notice that you, it's that time of year again. Or because you want people to notice that, you know, look, this is the thing I have. What is guiding? Are you guiding because you want people, the big, you know, big people to value the big children right now? The same idea. So he tells the story here of a big Talmid Chacham, who he says was one of the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And for a number of years, he would speak with me a couple of times a week after davening for about 40 minutes. And each time he would tell me, thank you so much. So I asked him, thank you. Thank you. You're a big Rosh Yeshiva. Why are you thanking me for the conversation? So he told him, he says, really, people think that I'm a big chatterbox. I like to schmooze. I talk a lot. I give shirim all the time. And people think that's my natural personality. But you should really know that in the morning, I have a lot of pressure. There's a lot going on. And I have to break out of that pressure in the morning. And without that, I wouldn't be able to talk. And after I can relax, after I talk with you, we just schmooze out for a bit, I can learn for 6-8 hours straight. Without looking up from the Gemara, but I just need to relieve that pressure. And he says that this guy had a lot of tzaras in his house and parnas and things like that. There's a lot of things going on. So Rav Hoffman said that he was very introspective and he knew himself very well and he knew what he needed. And he knew he needed to talk things out in order to have that sipuk, in order to fulfill that part of his neshama, and it allowed him to be able to learn better later on. He felt there was that bit of chevra shaft with Rav Shlomo Hoffman, talking and schmoozing, was necessary to open up so that he could sit and learn for 6 hours straight. He knew that he needed that. So he says, sometimes people, and he says about him, I'm the opposite. He says, honestly, I am an introvert, and I don't need to talk to anybody. That's what Rav Shlomo Hoffman said. I spend all day talking with people and choosing with people. That was his job. But he says, naturally, I don't. He said, I used to learn in the Umshin of Beis Medrash. After I got pension, I retired. He says, I would learn the Umshin of Beis Medrash, and I got a key to the library, to the annex. I would just sit there all by myself. So Rav Beryl Schwartzman, Rav Aaron Cutler's son-in-law, heard that he was learning by himself, and he says, it's not good for you. You gotta, you should come learn my kol in Beis HaTalmud. You'll come learn there, that's what it'll be. You'll be with other people. It's not good to learn by yourself. It'll make you depressed, it'll make you go crazy. So he said, don't do that. I went because Rav Schwartzman told me I should go, and I didn't want to do that. But he said, honestly, I would have been fine. I don't need people. I'm good. I'm fine to be alone. I'm fine to, you know, to sit by myself. And I have a good sense of that. So he said, and it makes a point over here. He says, we know that Shlomo HaMelech says, Yesh da'aga b'lev ish yasichena. V'yesh da'aga b'lev ish yasichena. With a sin and a samach. So yasichena, so there's two ways the Gemara darshans the pasuk. If you have da'aga b'lev, you have something in your heart, worry in your heart, yasichena, you should speak it out. But the Gemara also says, da'aga b'lev ish yasichena. You should close it up and keep it inside. Some people are better by with other people, and some people are better by themselves, and each one is different. Okay, so back to our children as well. We need to teach our children, you know, this balance between, you know, making sure they have a chevra, you know, not being too dependent on others, not being too independent, and balancing that sense of independence to know how to have good friends, how to know how to value themselves, and how to put everything in the right perspective.
I noticed that with